From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of January 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news, backed by more than 150 agricultural groups, the chair and ranking member of the U.S. Senate Ag Committee have moved to block the EPA from regulating greenhouse gases via the Clean Air Act. U.S. FDA says it will increase inspections of foreign food processing plants, and Russia is on the hunt for a new global poultry supplier. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then I'll tell you how landowners and farmers can help the U of I study the impact of sulfur on corn yield. And as we close out our half-hour program, we'll talk with state climatologist Jim Angel from the Illinois Water Survey about the weather forecast for the weekend, right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on a Friday afternoon, futures finish the day like this. Well, let's not start with the numbers, but we'll start instead with the cattle on feed report, which was released at 2 o'clock Central Time this afternoon. And it today showed that the cattle on feed now stand as of January 1st at 98%, placed in December at 94%, and marketed in December at 104%. We'll get to those numbers in their completion when we talk to Mike Zuzulo in just a moment here on Illinois Public Media. Back in Chicago now, we'll start in the wheat pit for the afternoon and take a look at the numbers as they settled up there for the day. Nearby March wheat at 498.5 was down a penny. The May at 512.25, down 3/4. And July 524, down 1 on the afternoon. March in Kansas City at 502, a penny and a half lower. March corn 364.75, 7.25 lower. The May at 375.5, down 7.25. And July at 385.5, down 6.75. December corn 397.25, down 8.25. March beans today 951.5, 2.5 cents lower. The May at 959.25, down 1.75. July 964.75, a penny and a quarter lower. And November beans at 933.25, down 0.75 cents. Bean meal down $1.10 at 286.40. Oil 29 cents lower today at 36.71. Mercantile exchange numbers finished the live cattle a nickel higher in the April. Feeders down 32.5 cents, and hogs finished 95 cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, nearby March contract, a $74.42 trade at the end of this day, down $1.67. Ethanol futures at $1.78.3. That's unchanged. Natural gas at $5.80.9, 19.5 cents higher. And the RBOB gasoline at $1.95.9. Down 2.3. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.93.7, 4.8 lower. And the gold futures today at $1,089.20 an ounce, down $13.50 on a Friday afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average 124 points lower at 10,265, and the U.S. dollar at 78.28 is down 0.03 for the day. The CRB index at 275.56, down 1.95. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like, as produced by our own Mike Sola. He says tonight, cloudy skies, lows will range from 28 in northeastern Indiana to 38 in the far south. Tomorrow, windy and milder in all sections. In western Illinois, cloudy, some rain, perhaps a few thunderstorms toward the south. In eastern Illinois and far western Indiana, cloudy, some rain arriving during the afternoon and evening. Elsewhere in Indiana, mostly cloudy. Highs tomorrow, says Mr. Sola, from 38 in far northern Illinois to 55 in the far south. The extended forecast says milder weather expected for the weekend. High temps on Saturday should range from the upper 30s in the far northern parts of Illinois to the 50s in the south. And highs Sunday should range from the 30s in northwestern Illinois to the 50s in the south. Cooler air will return, though, next week, but not bitter cold air. High temperatures next week should mostly range from the 20s in the north and 30s and low 40s in the south. I'll be back in a moment when we'll take a complete look at the agricultural markets for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On the line with us this Friday afternoon to take a look at what happened in the world of agricultural futures is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the report first. Cattle on feed numbers are out from USDA. They show 98% on feed as of January 1. That's within the range and pretty close to the average. Placed in December at 94. The average was 95, but there was a big range from 85.9 to 99.6. And then the one that's outside the range is marketed in December at 104. Average was 102.3. That 104 is up above the high end of the range, which ended at 103.5. What'd you make of all those numbers?
Well, I think the marketings is going to help. The Kansas and Texas steer prices have been kind of stuck in a range of 84.50 to 85.50. Given the marketings beat those estimates, I would hope that the nearby fats and the cash market would be helped out, you know, next week, Todd. I would think that maybe another $2 to $3 on top of 85 should be something we could get to between now and the end of January. So I think the best thing about the report was the marketings, and it should help the live cattle, nearby futures, and cash the most.
Let's go back and take a look at some of the numbers. I know that you and our director of ag programming here at Illinois Public Media talked about on the station this morning, and those were the numbers that came out from Informa. I did make note that you and Dave had discussed a 362 and a quarter mark there in the March corn, which it did not get below today. I suppose that's at least, if not a great sign, a decent
you
sign.
You take what you get, right?
Yeah, maybe.
I think the number was, as far as the Informa number being at 89.65, if you run a crop size of just under 13 billion and you run a demand side of just under 13 billion, you more or less come out with the same carryover that we've got running right now. So I would think that the numbers for the corn were mostly neutral. I think probably the biggest thing that hurt us was the fact that there was no real buy side taken up on the beans or on the wheat, and that in turn, you know, probably brought in some sellers into the corn. I would think there might have been some spreading as well with these acreage numbers, where the bean acres I thought were a little bit on the low end, at just under 78 million, and, you know, running through that into the 2010 supply demand. Using a 43-bushel yield, you're getting around a 3.3 billion bushel crop, a total supply of a little over 3.5 billion. You compare that to a total demand of about 3.15, 3.2. You're going to probably tack on another 100 to 125 million bushels into the carryover. But even with that, I think the trade was gearing up for more of a mindset that we're going to get closer to 80 million bean acres. So you saw the November beans find support off that, and yet the December corn fell to new lows. So I think there's probably quite a bit of spreading, both in the wheat and in the beans, in terms of buying beans, buying wheat against the short corn. So I think that's probably what we saw today.
Yeah, just to recap those numbers from Informa, their guesses for acreage, and it's awful early to do that, but everybody likes to take a shot at it. They say the 2010 corn acres in bull round should be about 90 million. That's up roughly 3 million from last year. Bean acres at 78 million, up around a half a million or 500,000 acres, that is.
Right.
And no change. They didn't give a number for wheat acres. So those are the numbers that Informa was working with. But the numbers we have to work with, of course, won't be released until March for acreage from USDA. And the last set is what we got last week from them. Not a lot of people happy. I'm wondering, though, I was thinking about that set of numbers and whether it was really, while we did drop pretty dramatically, whether it was much of a sea change from the expectations that traders had as we went through the month of November and December in terms of where the marketplace might be headed at this point in time.
Well, I think two things. I think going back to November and December, we had such delays out west, and there was a lot of controversy on the wheel media between analysts as far as whether it really meant that much in terms of production loss or not, and how fast. And I remember, you know, people talking about how snow was going through the back end of combine because they were still able to get the stuff in. So that controversy, I think, turned into uncertainty, and that uncertainty turned into volatility and adding risk premium going into the report. And so I was in Lima, Ohio last night. I was talking with the Ohio State ag economist. We did a panel together. And it was funny because a lot of people went into the report saying, it's going to be bullish, it's going to be bullish. Well, I think the trade had already factored in a pretty bullish report, and we needed to feed the bull on the report. We didn't feed the bull, and as a result, the longs jumped ship. And I think they jumped ship in a big way. And like we talked about a couple weeks ago, then that kind of that perfect bearish storm came where China started limiting their policy. And I heard that more and more in the last week. I mean, I didn't hear much of it in the week of the report where the Chinese issue was starting to crimp the demand side and traders were getting nervous about Chinese demand. But, boy, I sure heard a lot of it this week, Todd, especially when it came to the crude oil traders and the metals traders. That was in the news a lot and in the traders' mindset a lot, that they're taming their inflation. That means less demand. And as a result, we're down in, you know, prices for crude oil that we haven't seen in several weeks, and we're near some very key trend lines, and we're breaking the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones. Among other reasons, the reason we're breaking that is because of the hit the Asian markets have taken with this Chinese policy. I noted that the Hong Kong stock index, since the day before the USDA report, it's fallen 11% from its high. So I think there again, you're getting some of that bled into the grain. So I think your point's well taken. We had a too bullish mindset, generally speaking, going into the report. The report didn't feed the bull, and at the same time, the Asian market started to take a big hit, and that hit the outside markets, which then again bled into the grains.
Is the Asian market hit, is it real for the grains and oil seeds, for instance? Is there any indication that they have or will stop buying soybeans?
I don't think so. I think that most of
it. And isn't that the peg you have to hang on for a while?
I think it is. I mean, I think what you're looking at, like this week's export sales, 75.3% went to China once again. And I think what's changed in Chicago in relation to China is we no longer have tight supplies and great demand. We still have demand, but it's a questionable demand, and we've got these new crop supplies coming on. But, you know, February is a whole nother month in terms of weather in South America, and we could brew up a weather market in February fairly easily, given the fact that we've taken over a dollar out of the beans at this point. So I think that we are. I talked to a guy last night after the meeting, and he said, you know, everybody was on one side of the boat. Everybody was bullish before the report, and then now everybody's getting bearish. They're on the other side of the boat. You know, I thought that was a great analogy. I think that's probably where we sit right now. Are the people that are on the bearish side of the boat going to be right? Well, I think, again, it goes back to the outside markets. If the stock markets in Asia and the United States keep falling, I think that is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy that we will lose demand and trade will slip in the agriculture and in the metals and in the energy. So it's not a story that's finished yet. But to answer your question directly right now, I don't see a lot of loss in bean demand at this point.
Okay, so where do we go from here for both corn, beans, and then throw wheat into the mix, please?
I put it to the clients very bluntly after the Informa numbers came out. We've got a lot of forced selling that's going to have to be done for cash flow needs on cash corn for 09. And if we take out that 362 and a quarter low in March corn next week, because the outside markets, the stocks and the crude oil are making new lows as we speak, if we go ahead and take that out on a closing basis, make the forced sale, get it dumped, and then come back in and buy it back on paper before that March 10th report. I think that's the best strategy I can come up with right now.
Yeah, so forced sale, you're saying on cash flow needs, but not because it's going out of condition or something like that. And there's a lot of discussion about that or chatter. I read something on DTN today about that, in fact.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. If you've got corn that you think is going out of condition, why let that ticking time bomb sit in your bin? Buy it back on paper where you don't have to worry about the dock fee. I mean, I think that's just as pertinent as if you're wondering whether you should go out and borrow short-term money right now for the next couple weeks, and it with the idea that if we can hold the markets together, we've got those gaps from the report day, those skid marks we left on the charts, that we have a target to get back up to.
We started with the cattle. Shall we finish with the hogs? What do you see there?
Well, I think there's a cycle high coming in the hogs. February has been going up. The February contract has been going up almost the whole month of January, and that's very counter-seasonal. And I think we've built a lot of bullishness in to the lower supply and stronger demand. If we do lose the stock markets and the dollar does come back anymore, I think that will weigh on the hogs. So I like hedging hogs here for the Jan, Feb, March time period. Wouldn't do anything past March at this point.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Risk Management, or rather with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Friday afternoon. Director of Ag Programming at Illinois Public Media is here now with today's agricultural news. Please welcome Dave Dickey.
In agricultural news, with a letter of support from more than 150 agriculture groups, the chairman and ranking member of the U.S. Senate Agriculture Committee are backing a resolution in Congress to block the EPA from regulating greenhouse gases under the Clean Air Act. The ag groups noted that both the Bush administration and officials in President Barack Obama's administration have stated that the Clean Air Act is not the appropriate legislation to regulate greenhouse gases. The agriculture groups wrote that, quote, compliance costs for these Clean Air Act programs would be overwhelming. The ag groups added that the EPA also considers its own proposed rule as a, quote, weak indirect link between greenhouse gases and public health. A U.S. Food and Drug official says that the Obama administration intends to increase the number of inspections of foreign food processing plants from 100 to 2,000 per year. Stephen Sunloff, director of the FDA's Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, says that the FDA will be looking especially for listeria in imported cheese products. Russian chicken importers have begun the search for alternative suppliers, including Thailand, as talks with the U.S. grinds to a halt without a commitment from Moscow to reopen Washington's biggest export market. Russia suspended U.S. poultry imports from January 19th and has taken a hard line with Washington. The U.S. says its poultry is safe, though, and some critics of the ban say it could be politically motivated. Visiting U.S. officials declined to be interviewed in Moscow. 2 days of talks this week did not produce an agreement. Brazilian milling groups and the Brazilian government are considering possible ethanol imports from the U.S. in the coming months. Brazil, the world's number one producer of sugarcane-based ethanol, is assessing possible imports of the alternative fuel as supplies dwindle from its main center-south sugarcane region, which accounts for 90% of the country's cane. The Buenos Aires Grain Exchange says that Argentina's 2009-2010 corn harvest is seen at a higher than expected 18 million metric tons, as recent rains boost prospects for bumper yields. Meanwhile, the exchange slightly trimmed its outlook for the 2009-2010 wheat harvest to 7.44 million metric tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program and of Commodity Week. We'll post it to our website at willag.org by just about 6 o'clock Central Time this evening. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural markets. Up on our website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock on Friday nights. Now up next, you know, the soil fertility specialist right here on campus is planning a sulfur study for the 2010 growing season. I'll have more on the macronutrient, how it is used in the corn plant, and how farmers and landowners can participate in the U of I research. We think of fertilizer or plant food as being primarily N, P, and K, or nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. The next macronutrient on the list, says University of Illinois soil fertility and plant nutrition specialist Fabian Fernandez, is sulfur.
Sulfur is one of the essential elements, so the plant needs sulfur in order to complete its life cycle. And it requires quite a bit of sulfur. We divide the nutrients into macro elements or micro elements. Macro means that they are needed in large supply. Micro, that are needed in less supply. And so sulfur is one of the macro elements, meaning that it's needed in a large supply. And typically we don't worry about it because there is enough in the soil to supply the needs of the crop. But as I mentioned, we are seeing more and more responses to sulfur as we increase production and we reduce the amount of inputs of sulfur.
The amount of sulfur soils in the state are being exposed to annually has declined dramatically over the last three decades. It means, says the soil scientist, that adding a bit of sulfur to the fertilizer mix can cause a corn yield response. He surmises, but cannot be sure, that response comes because of the lower sulfur inputs.
Some of the reasons are that we have higher yields than what we had 3 years ago, so there is more removal or more potential removal of sulfur. Industry is burning a lot cleaner, so there is less sulfur deposition from the atmosphere. And there are less inputs of sulfur in the farming system. There are less fertilizers that have sulfur in them, as well as insecticides and pesticides.
It seems clear, then, that there is a lack of this macronutrient, but that doesn't mean it's true. So, U of I Extension's Fabian Fernandez is setting up a statewide sulfur study. He's looking for a few good farmers to give him a hand.
That's right, yes. We would like to get a good representation of the state. So looking at, we are right now looking for volunteers that could participate in this program. As many sites as possible. The more sites we have, the better it is for this type of research. And in terms of what we are looking for specifically, we are looking for fields that are low in organic matter, fields that have coarse texture, sandy soils, types that will more likely respond to sulfur, and so across the state, basically.
Fernandez says for the purposes of this study, he is not interested in testing soils where sulfur or manure has been applied in the last 5 years. Those interested in participating in the sulfur study can call or email Fabian Fernandez on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana-Champaign. His email address is fernandez@illinois.edu, and his phone number is 217-333-4426. That's 217-333-4426. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org, where by about 6 o'clock this evening we'll post Commodity Week. Our guest this week is Jim Heminger. He's from Top Third, and the panelists will include Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group, Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing, and Corey Winstead of AgriVisor. Commodity Week, posted to our website at about 6 o'clock this evening on a Friday. I'll be back in 2 minutes with the agricultural weather forecast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. A University of Illinois police officer says a vintage grenade discovered in a Champaign apartment building on West Church Street has been safely destroyed. Sergeant Steve Tromme says the German live potato masher grenade, the kind typically used during World Wars I and II, was discovered in the bottom of a closet by building contractors. Tromme translated the German writing on the side of the bomb, which read, "For use, insert blasting cap." He says the bomb squad from Champaign Police and his department used a hot stick, a long pole with a clamp at the end, to safely remove it, and the bomb was safely blown up by the U of I's Police Training Institute. Tromme says there's no telling how the bomb wound up in the apartment building, but says they deteriorate with age and is not worth taking any chances when disposing of such a thing. Illinois Governor Pat Quinn's administration is acknowledging it misidentified hundreds of inmates released from prison early. The Corrections Department acknowledged the error last night after inquiries from the Associated Press about inmates involved in the discontinued program MGT Push. Corrections released an updated index showing 250 inmates not previously listed as part of the program. At the same time, the agency removed 223 who did not benefit from early release and shouldn't have been included. That means 1,745 inmates in all were let go early. That's 27 more than previously reported. The administration blamed an outdated computer system. Tinley Park police say eight investigators are still sifting through thousands of tips received following the fatal shootings at a Lane Bryant store in 2008. The number includes six full-time police officers from the suburban Chicago Police Department. Police say the total cost of the investigation has exceeded $1 million. On February 2nd of that year, a man entered a store and fatally shot five women during a botched robbery attempt. A sixth woman was shot but survived. Since that time, investigators have received more than 5,500 tips, and police say investigators are reworking them all. DuPage County Board Chairman Bob Schillerstrom has ended his campaign for Illinois governor, announcing this morning that he's now endorsing former State Attorney General Jim Ryan for the state's top office. Schillerstrom cited a lack of campaign money in making his decision. The Republican says it wasn't one that came lightly given the time committed to his gubernatorial run. His name will still appear in the February 2nd ballot. I'm Jeff Bossert.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. It's a Friday afternoon. On the line with us to take a look at the weather forecast for the Midwest and the state is state climatologist just at the Illinois State Water Survey, Jim Angel. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Finally, it seems like we've had a week. While it's been gray and kind of gloomy, at least it's let up a bit on us, I suppose. It wasn't icy, and it wasn't snowy, and it wasn't bitterly cold. Can we hope for better conditions as we go into next week?
Well, if we're going to start out on the wet side this weekend, we'll actually be warmer. That's the good news. We'll be up into the 40s on the highs for the day. But starting on Saturday night, Sunday, and Sunday night, we have a pretty good chance of rain in all of the, both those days. Looks like about a potential of about a half an inch of precipitation, and almost all of it is going to fall as snow. Now, we start getting into next week, it's actually going to start cooling off a little bit with daytime highs in the right around the freezing mark and nighttime temperatures down into the 20s and even into the teens as the week progresses there. We're going to be kind of under the influence of a high pressure system, so that's going to pretty much lock out any chance of precipitation. So it'll be kind of cold and dry for the next week.
Sunny skies at least?
Yeah, at least we'll see some sunshine. Starting about Monday, certainly by Tuesday, we'll start seeing some sunshine.
We still have a full week left in the month of January, but do you have an inkling as to whether we'll come in January colder than usual, on tap for about normal, or somewhere else?
Yeah, I think right now it looks like we're going to be below average for the month. That's probably no surprise. Temperatures right now through today are at about 5 degrees below normal, despite the fact that we had a fairly mild week. As we return to colder conditions next week, that's going to kind of hold that in place there. Probably, believe it or not, we'll probably be on a little bit on the dry side. Right now, we're running about 58% of normal precipitation. We'll get a little bit over the weekend, but then it'll turn dry next week. So we'll probably be a little bit on the dry side, but certainly colder than average for the month.
And then with the cold temperatures that are coming in, and they don't look like they're bitterly cold, but the warm temperatures we have had has gotten rid of a lot of the snow cover. Who will have snow left, do you think, by the time we get to Monday and Tuesday and the cold temperatures come back in?
Well, there's probably places in the northern part of the state, and then and you go on into, you know, the Iowa and some of those places, they're going to have snow for a long, long time. It's going to take a while to get rid of some of those deeper piles of snow. But I think here in central Illinois, we may start to see it disappear this weekend.
All right. Well, just concerned about the wheat crop and its exposure.
Thanks so much
for joining us today. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel, Illinois State Water Survey, and he's our state climatologist joining us here on the Closing Market Report. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org to listen to Commodity Week. We'll post it by about 6 o'clock this evening. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Learned Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.